It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. For many, Thanksgiving's origin story conjures images of a landmark meal shared by pilgrims and Native Americans. But our guest says that's not quite what happened. He tells us how the meal took on a narrative more romantic than real and explains how the myth affects Native people today. When you think about Thanksgiving's origin story, what were you taught in school, and what do you know about it now? Has your perception of what happened changed over the years? How did that happen? Do you celebrate Thanksgiving differently as a result? Tell us about that. Do you celebrate at all? Are you a Native American? What does the Thanksgiving holiday represent to you? Do you wish people would amend their understanding of this origin story? What do you want people to know about how this affects perceptions of Native Americans? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Gary Johnson is a professor emeritus from UW-Superior, where he directed the First Nations Center and coordinated the First Nations program. He is an enrolled member of the Lakotere Band of Ojibwe. Gary, thanks for coming into our studios this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So when we think about Thanksgiving's origin story, there are some who think of pilgrims and members of the Wampanoag tribe sitting around a table happily sharing a giant meal to celebrate the pilgrims' first harvest after Native Americans taught them how to farm. Perhaps there's a giant turkey being carved up. Okay, what do we know about what it was really like?
Actually, we don't know a lot. There's only one account of that so-called First Thanksgiving, and it doesn't give a lot of details about it. But what most people think of is the pilgrims giving thanks for having survived through the winter, and most people think that they invited the Indians in because they helped them survive and things like that, but that's not quite what was happening there.
So who were the pilgrims giving thanks to?
Well, they gave thanks to God for letting them survive. They didn't give much credit to the Native people that were helping them. The Native people provided them with the right crops to grow and then how to grow. The climate was very different from where they came from in England, and so they weren't very prepared for what they encountered here. And the tribes did help them because that's our nature, is to help people that are in trouble and stuff like that, so we did help them. But this idea of them being buddy-buddy and stuff like that, that wasn't really true.
Well, the meal has kind of come to symbolize this sort of peaceful coexistence between the pilgrims and the Native people. That's not true. So what was the real situation?
Well, at best, they were like maybe tolerant allies. one of the problems is that, you know, they escaped religious persecution in England and came over and decided to establish the same policy over here. They had a lot of ethnocentricity about how their way of life was right, because the Native people they encountered were not like anything they'd ever heard about or seen about. And they were coming out of that Middle Ages type of thing, you know, the Crusades and stuff like that, and they believed it was their mission to Christianize the world. And so the Native people obviously weren't Christian, and so one of the first things they did is try to impose their will upon the Native people.
And how was that received?
Well, how would you like somebody coming in and telling you how to live, how to pray? And
right. Not good, in other words.
Right.
Yeah. And yet they were tolerated. What kind of food did they eat, and was turkey involved?
Could have been, but if anybody ever hunted turkey, you know that they're not very easy to get. And so most likely it was probably ducks, maybe geese, something along those lines. But more likely it was fish, eel, lobster, things like that. It was New England, so those were very readily available and stuff like that. And the idea that they invited the Indians wasn't really true either. They were celebrating this harvest, and they were shooting, probably having competitions and stuff with their guns and stuff like that. And so Indian people heard all this shooting, and they thought, well, we better go check this out. So then they came along, and so then once they were there, they're like, well, we better eat. And so then the Native people brought things like venison and some of the other things that we come to associate with it, corn and stuff like that. But it wasn't very likely that turkey was even on that first Thanksgiving table.
Mm-hmm. And when we think about, for example, Squanto, we think of someone who helped the pilgrims by acting as a translator between them and the Wampanoag and showing them how to farm the land. Is that accurate, or are we missing a big chunk of the picture here?
Well, you have to remember that Squanto was a slave. He'd been taken back to England and had lived over there for years. And so he learned English as a means of getting away, of escaping. And then when he came back, he did help them. He did show them proper planting techniques in the crops, like the Three Sisters, corn, squash, and beans that grow well in that area. But the idea that he was all for this was, you know, was not really accurate.
There was no parade down the main drag in New York City, and no giant balloons. Was it even called Thanksgiving?
No.
I mean, was it called anything? I mean,
it was just a harvest feast type of thing.
The meal takes on a significance for us today, but was this meal as significant to the pilgrims and Native Americans of the time as history books suggest?
No. It was just a meal between, like I said, coexisting allies and stuff like that. And the main thing is that they were not equals. They didn't look at each other as equals, especially the pilgrims and the Puritans that followed after them. They looked down upon the Native people and thought it was their mission to, like I said, to Christianize them.
Well, they thought the Native people were savages.
Exactly, because they didn't worship the same God. They didn't, in their minds, they didn't go to a church. They didn't practice religion and things like that.
Gary Johnson is a professor emeritus from UW-Superior, where he directed the First Nations Center and coordinated the First Nations program. When you think about Thanksgiving's origin story, what were you taught in school, and what do you know about it now? Do you wish people would amend their understanding of this story? What do you want people to know about how this affects perceptions of Native Americans today? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. How did the story of this meal in 1621 evolve into the narrative most Americans think of today?
Well, there was a letter that was written, and I'm sorry, but I can't remember who wrote it, but to kind of laid out what was going on there. And then after that, the relationship between natives and non-natives deteriorated pretty rapidly. And it was when the Native people resisted, many times the answer was just to get rid of them, to kill them. And so there was this warlike atmosphere between the two that, and pretty soon they realized they just weren't going to get along. One of the things that the Puritans did is they brought in the chief of the Wampanoags that was trying to help them to survive and stuff like that. And as a sign of getting rid of this resistance, they cut his head off, stuck it on a pole that sat outside their fort for like 20 years as a symbol of resistance.
Mm.
So you can imagine that that relationship was just not going to work out.
Okay. We're going to continue our conversation with Gary Johnson in just a moment. What do you think about Thanksgiving? What have you been taught about it? What do you know? What do you understand? What would you like to know? 800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Well, this is Thanksgiving week, and we celebrate this holiday every year, but do many of us actually know how it got started and what it's all about, and how do we separate the myth and the romance from what really happened and how it affects people today? Are you a Native American? Do you what does the holiday mean to you? How does it represent itself? Do you wish people would amend their understanding of this origin story that we've been talking about? What do you want people to know about how this affects perceptions of Native Americans? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Gary Johnson is with us. Gary's a professor emeritus from UW-Superior. He directed the First Nations Center and coordinated the First Nations program at UW-Superior. And Truth in Advertising, he and I went to high school together as well. I'll at least admit that, Gary. You might not want to. Just kind of jump forward. We had this origin story of this, the Pilgrims and the Wampanoag and everybody getting along, and then we moved from that to the Puritans cutting the head off the Wampanoag chief and displaying it as a trophy. How does the way the narrative developed about Thanksgiving affect Native Americans today?
Well, that narrative only says part of it. And so many times dealing with Native people, we're dealing with people that grew up on the myth of what Native people were. And so part of what our program has done for so long is try to set the record straight, because you can't really deal with each other until you come to a place of understanding and truth between each other. And too many times, if we don't look like that myth, we don't get recognized. They don't see us. And then when we stand up for things that are important to us, people don't want to hear it. They want the myth. They don't want the reality of what's out there. And so as Native people, we are still very misunderstood as to how we live, what we believe, how we govern, and things like that. And so if we can get rid of some of those myths, we're not trying to ruin Thanksgiving. Many Native people practice Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is part of our culture. It's what we do, but we don't do it just that one day. We have Thanksgivings throughout the whole year. I mean, whenever, you know, the harvest is only part of it. You know, we give thanks for everything, because we refer to the earth as our mother. Because everything we have in this life comes from the earth, and we have to give thanks. So we have to recognize that gift that she's given us so that we can survive. The food, the clothes, everything that we have in this world comes from the earth. And so we give thanks for that. You know, whenever we go out to harvest something, we always put down some asema, tobacco, and give thanks, because we understand that that is a sacrifice, that is a gift that we're giving. And so then we do a Thanksgiving afterwards. You know, when our children get their first deer, we have a feast for that, to give thanks, to show that we recognize this. When we gather wild rice, when we gather maple syrup, whenever we gather medicine, forest products, whatever it might be, we always give a gift of tobacco and say thanks and have a first feast for that. So we do it the year round. Mm-hmm. It's a daily thing. We're supposed to start off each morning and give an offering of tobacco and thank the Creator for letting us get up one more day. As I get older, I understand that more and more.
Yeah, well, my dad always said, every day on the green side of the sod is a good day, and you should appreciate it.
Exactly. That's what the Thanksgiving is about. It's not just that one day, mm-hmm. and to recognize that.
One of the other big issues over the last number of decades, actually, today, many American communities, roads, military aircraft have Native American names. What's that say to you about how Americans regard Native people?
Well, it's part of that stereotype. You know, all they see us for is the savage part, the warlike qualities and stuff like that. There are many tribes that didn't even go on the war path, for crying out loud. And so it perpetuates that image of that historical warrior type of thing. You know, when I talk to groups, a lot of times I'll ask them, what's the first thing that pops into your head, first image that pops into your head when I talk about American Indians or Native Americans? And generally it's that stereotypical image. You know, so I'll ask them, I said, did you ever think of a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, a woman? You know, so we're constantly having to fight that stereotype. And so one of the things we'd like to get across is that we're part of this contemporary world. You know, after the Europeans got here, when they first got here, there was probably 100, 120 million native people. And after the Europeans came here, we lost about 90% of our population. A lot of that due to the illnesses that they brought with them, but also to the policies of just, you know, it was a policy in this country at one time to exterminate all the native people. We've rebounded now and there are about 50 million native people, but still, you know, we have to constantly fight that stereotypical image. And you go to most elementary schools right now, you can walk in there and they've probably got half them kids dressed up as pilgrims, half them dressed up with little paper feather headbands on. So we kind of perpetuate this myth, this stereotype, and that's what we need to get rid of. We cannot truly understand each other without getting rid of that.
Yeah, how do we fix that? Are there any efforts being made to remedy what our textbooks so consistently get wrong?
Well, there's me.
Yeah, well, we're here today, so I guess that's a start. But
well, our program has been fighting that for about almost 30 years, trying to set that record to give the information. And it always amazes me that, you know, after a while you think, well, they're going to stop learning this stuff. No. You know, a lot of the students were angry, like, how come I was never taught these things? So one of the things we can do is get the schools to quit perpetuating some of those things. Columbus Day, Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How can we, as individuals, without going back to school, how can we overcome the stereotypes we've perpetuated about Native Americans?
Well, get to know some Native people. One of the problems is that for most people, Native people aren't somebody you sit down at the table with and have a meal with and talk about life and things like that. So you have to try to take the opportunities when they arise. You know, the program I had here, we offered stuff at least once a month for people to come and experience what real Native culture was about, to interact, to bump elbows with Native people. You can go to a powwow. There's things happening all the time. There's concerts. There's lectures. There's things to do, but you're going to have to probably take the incentive to go out there, and that's tough. That's really tough for some people because it gets you out of your comfort zone. I was standing around at one of our powwows one time with one of the faculty here. I won't tell who it was. But she was like, you know, she looked all nervous. And I said, what's wrong? She goes, I don't know if I'm supposed to be here. I'm not Indian. And I'm like, well, this is not just for Indian people. It's for everybody. Just come and enjoy, experience that. Powwow is one of the best ways to see Native people interacting.
Okay. Your experience, obviously, growing up where you did in Hayward, as I did, I guess I could say that it's possible to live in a community like that and know absolutely nothing. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. The places like Hayward and Spooner, which are on the edge of Indian country, seem to have the tallest walls of any place. In the most misinformation about each other. This is where a lot of the fear comes from, is just from misinformation. And when you just use the media for your information, I mean, all they tend to cover is the negative things. You don't see a lot of positive things going on in Indian country being talked about and stuff like that. And so those are some of the toughest places because they're right there. And the prejudices and the stereotypes build up, and there's like a wall around the reservation that people think that they can't come into, and the Native people are dreadful to go across it, too. So you have to break down those walls.
There's a lot of fear.
Yes. It's human nature to fear what you don't know. And so you have to take that step to say, well, I'm not going to live in fear. I'm going to find out about these things and to find out that the stereotypes aren't real. I used to teach a class every summer, and we did it from a Native perspective where I took them to Indian country. We went to the reservation. We went to Madeline Island, places like that, so they could actually meet Indian people, see them in their natural living conditions and stuff like that. And I'll never forget one day we're driving across the reservation down at LCO, and we went up by the Chippewa Flowage, and one of the guys looks at me and he says, this is the reservation? I said, well, yeah, this is part of it. He says, geez, it ain't that bad, huh? But that's what I'm talking about. You have to get out of that comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And then you find out that, geez, this isn't that bad, huh?
There you go. Okay, well, you know what? I think that's a good place to leave it. I hope that we've managed to clear up some things and maybe get some people to do a little thinking that would be beneficial to them. And, well, McGwich.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Gary Johnson for coming into our Superior studios this morning. He's a professor emeritus from UW-Superior, where he directed the First Nations Center and coordinated the First Nations program. He's also an enrolled member of the Lac-Couturier Band of Ojibwe. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson.